Pancakes and Power Slams. This is your Raw correspondent, Derek, talking to you live. Pancakes and Power Slams, courtesy Chris Featherstone. We'll be with us shortly. However, he's not with us at the time. Still recovering from back surgery. Please keep him in your thoughts. He will be back soon. However, we need to go off the show. He agrees. Let's see what's going on. Monday Night Raw last night. Monday Night Raw, Stephanie McMahon comes out. She stops the Triple H and Axel match. I don't understand what's going on with that. You know, comes out, Vince McMahon agrees, confirms that there's no match. Triple H looks like he's upset. Triple H doesn't seem like he really agrees with what's going on. You see him backstage, looks like he's going to fight, but then again, he backs down. So let's not focus too much on that. Monday Night Raw last night was ever an awesome Raw. After that, you had the Shield come out versus Randy Orton and Team Hell No. Team Hell No has really brought a lot out of the tag team division that is the WWE. WWE again. It cannot be rivaled. So, you know, with Randy Orton, he's up and coming, which is kind of sad to say, seeing how long he's been around, but he's up and coming. Team Hell No. I don't want to see Team Hell No disband, but it looks like that's going to be happening here soon. We don't want that to happen. We also we want to see the Shield continue to grow, continue to prosper. It could be end up being another NWO type of feud going on with WWF, the Shield. It depends what angle to go with that. There's a lot to be seen with that. Let's go to a trivia question tonight. Trivia question I thought of. Let's see what we can do with this trivia question. Again, call in, please. 347-884-8452 is the phone number to call in. Please, my name is Derek, the Raw correspondent. Chris Featherstone, the creator of Pancakes and Power Slams, will be on soon. Chat with us in the chat room. Also, you can give us a tweet. Call in 847-884-8452 is the number to call in. Trivia question tonight, the very first one. Let's say, who was the guest of Piper's Pit at WrestleMania 5? We're going to go on with that. Who was the guest of Piper's Pit at WrestleMania 5? If anyone can answer that, please answer in the chat room. Give us a call, 347-884-8452. This is Pancakes and Power Slams. Chris Featherstone will be with us shortly. Okay, so after you see the debacle with Curtis Axel and Triple H not having a match tomorrow night, then we went to Shield versus Orton, Team Hell No. You have Uso. Uso is the new, they look like, they come from the Samoan heritage, which is good in WWE. They really embody the heritage, embody the Samoan tradition in wrestling. And they come out with Titus O'Neil and Darren Young. Kind of a lame match. I didn't think that it really contributed very much to Monday Night Raw. I want to kind of skip past that. And let's go to Alberto Del Rio versus Big E Langston. Big E Langston has come a long way in his short time. He's a big guy. Alberto Del Rio always seems to get the best of him, however. And with Ricardo, yeah, they're an unstoppable team. I'm really glad Alberto doesn't come out to the annoying car anymore when he honks the horn and kind of drive everyone nuts. With that, Alberto Del Rio, he is a future talent. He's a strong talent right now. WWE has come a long way in the past probably year, year and a half, as far as the talent they have, who they've produced and what's going on. So I want to keep that going. So Alberto Del Rio, I'm always going to be interested in what he's up to. I want to see what's going on with that. With the Big E Langston, I mean, I see future matches going on with that. Sheamus versus Cody Rhodes. Yeah, Sandow is doing commentary. Sandow tries too hard. I don't really believe in much what Sandow does. I like the character, but again, he tries way too much to overcompensate himself on his abilities. He thinks he has magic. It's really not too believable when I still compare him to the Lanny Poffo genius of the early 90s with Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig. So let's see. Do we have any answers so far? Answers we have, maybe not. Again, what was the best of WrestleMania 5?
All right, it looks like we have some technical difficulties. I am Chris Featherstone here on the line. I am sorry about that. I was told looks like I was brought online here due to some technical difficulties. I apologize. We apologize about that. It looks like Derek had some glitch problems in the studio there. But here I am. I'm Chris Featherstone, and I am here on Pancakes and Power Slams. Once again on Tuesday night, recovering from back surgery. Once again, apologies for the lag time, some technical difficulties in the studio. But we're gonna go forward here with Raw. Hopefully, Derek will be back here on the line here shortly, as I'm recovering from back surgery. But I am always here to be sure to make it happen, and make it happen for all of you to hear. We are going to make this happen, but we will be back with Pancakes and Power Slams very, very quickly. All right, we are here live on Pancakes and Power Slams. once again, apologize very, very much for the unfortunate glitch there. We are going to make this happen live and in living color, if you will, as Dusty Rhodes would say. The flavor of the week this week is the top 10 United States champions in pro wrestling history. So once again, I apologize on behalf of Derek what happened, but I was ready to get on the line. Like I said, recovering from back surgery, but was notified and saw that there was a glitch, and I am here. So let's continue to make this fun. 347-884-8452. Be sure to tweet your comments and go into the chat room live. And, of course, any applicable chat room comments will be said live on the air. Let's go to Raw. Derek managed to talk about a few things on Raw. We're going to go back here and start with the Stephanie McMahon segment. Speaking in the ring, telling the audience that she has made the executive decision to take Triple H out the match, to a chorus of calloused, inconsiderate boos, was kind of, well, I guess it's the wrestling community. I was thinking, like, yeah, it's, you know, if it's a concussion, it's a serious injury, but I guess people didn't really factor that in when they booed. Then Vince McMahon comes out, good to see him, speaks up for Triple H, and continues to incite boos from the home state crowd. Then the Shield appears. I was thinking that something actually was going to happen between them at that time, but nothing happened. It was just kind of Shield comes and sets it up for the next for the next match. It would be interesting to somehow play that in with Vince McMahon. Be very interesting to see that. But we didn't see it on Raw. Shield defeats Randy Orton and Team Hell No. Typical Shield win. But Daniel Bryan taking the loss after Randy Orton RKO's, I believe it was Seth Rollins. I think he was going for Roman Reigns, if I'm not mistaken. And as he was doing that, he was pushed into Daniel Bryan, and unfortunately, Daniel Bryan took the loss. So he was backstage. He argues with Kane, Randy Orton backstage. Triple H comes in the arena and he goes in Mick McMahon's office. He said he's going to wrestle tonight. Usos defeating the Primetime Players. I was actually very happy with that decision. I like the rebirth that they were saying with the whole face paint. I think that that was a great idea. The Usos, I will continue to speak highly towards the Usos. The Usos is one of the best pure tag teams, legitimate tag teams in the WWE. Still has not got any type of WWE championship run. So very, very surprising to me that they would manage to not have that type of ability or that type of accomplishment yet. They've been there for a few years now. So I think that it's about that time for the Usos to, one, be heavy in the title scene, and two, actually win the titles. So we'll see where that goes. Alberto Del Rio defeats Biggie Langston in their fifth match. People complain about this. I don't know why. I mean, Dolph Ziggler's out with a concussion. They still need some type of Dolph Ziggler, I guess, in our head, so to speak. So why don't you use this heavy? It's also good that AJ Lee comes out with Biggie Langston as well, so it still keeps that Dolph Ziggler factor in. So I don't understand. I mean, this is typical. This is old school wrestling. I mean, you got a best of five series. Each match has been good between Alberto Del Rio and Biggie Langston. I mean, this is what we need to see. We need to see good wrestling, and this is really putting Biggie Langston on the map, and it's really giving him an opportunity to really break away, so to speak, from Dolph Ziggler and AJ Lee. And I think it's a great idea. I mean, just the very fact that you know, Biggie Langston is being used in this capacity opens up the options of where he could go now. I mean, if he wanted that babyface opportunity in the near future, they could do that, especially what we've been seeing with last week. There was some animosity between him and AJ as a result of AJ pulling the turnbuckle down and unfortunately backfiring against Biggie Langston. So I like it. The best of five series is great. Dolph Ziggler is cleared to wrestle now, so we should see him back in the fold. It's only, you know, less than 2 weeks before Payback, so it'll be interesting to see if they go ahead and insert that World Heavyweight Championship match in there before it is ready for Payback, and this early, I mean this close to Payback. Sheamus defeating Cody Rhodes, actually a good match between the two. Very, very interesting way to continue this Sheamus and Damian Sandow feud. Very, very, which I like. I write a SmackDown review on WrestlingInc.com, and I mentioned that I like this Sheamus and Damian Sandow feud. I think it's a great way to use both of them. Neither of them are in a mega spot right now, and I also think that this puts Damian Sandow back on the map, and we'll talk a little bit more about that on when I review SmackDown. Triple H reluctantly agrees to leave and gets a limo. Honestly, I really don't understand the point of that whole few segments there. I guess to have Triple H and not the McMahons come out, since, you know, it is, of course, it's the McMahons' home state, but Triple H is from Connecticut as well. So I don't know. Maybe it's a home state appearance that garnered some pops. I really don't understand the purpose of those segments there. It was good to see the McMahons, but to see Triple H come in and then leave, just really didn't make much sense to me. The great Ghali defeating Fandango by count out. Him continued to walk out. Fandango continuing to walk out matches. Very, very interesting there. And then as Fandango was walking away, we saw The Miz coming out of the ramp to kind of block Fandango from continuing to walk away. And then we have Wade Barrett, The Miz turning around to a Wade Barrett bullhammer elbow. So that was an interesting way to set up the match between Wade Barrett and The Miz. And that should be a good feud, actually. I'm liking what I'm seeing with the three of them. Like I said before, this actually may be an opportunity to give Fandango a mid-card title, which I didn't think would happen, but I think they may go ahead and make the decision to make The Miz a mid-card champion. I believe that Derek asked the trivia question of who was Roddy Piper's guest on WrestleMania 5. Who was Roddy Piper's guest on WrestleMania 5? Still don't have any answers for that. I think I'm going to go ahead and say the right answer, Piper's Pit at WrestleMania 5. Nobody gets it after I review Miz and Wade Barrett. I'm going to go ahead and make that happen as far as saying the correct answer. And The Miz defeating Wade Barrett, it's unfortunate that Wade Barrett is being utilized in the way that he does. When they had those vignettes when he came back a little bit over a year ago, I really think that he was, in my opinion, I think that he was groomed to becoming a main event, being a main event status. But unfortunately, they're still incredibly improperly booking Wade Barrett. There's no way that Wade Barrett should not be an upper mid-carder or a main eventer. I mean, he really put himself on the map on Nexus, really proved himself, put on some good matches, legitimized himself as a main eventer at that point in time, and I really am surprised and I'm really shocked that they just bombed. I mean, they just really dropped the bomb on Wade Barrett. There's absolutely no way that he shouldn't be one of the top heels in the WWE right now. He hasn't done anything wrong to basically say, okay, well, here's the ball, and I dropped it. It was the booking. The Nexus worked. The Nexus was one of the most shocking. I mean, the thing is, these days, there's not many things that that causes a shock value in professional wrestling. And Wade Barrett and the Nexus did exactly that. I think that because Wade Barrett did that, he really catapulted himself as a legitimate top guy. And then they did the split, and then the core happened, and that was just the worst thing that could have happened for Wade Barrett. The core was just such a bust. And it wasn't his fault. I mean, he even won the Intercontinental Championship during that time. So, still, I mean, and then when he left, he came back, he was in the Elimination Chamber, left, came back, and I think that they even bombed on his return because they had some really good promo videos, really good vignettes for Wade Barrett, and then they had him debut, they had him come back against Yoshitatsu on SmackDown. Who really cares about that? After all of those weeks of really good vignettes, they had him come back against Yoshitatsu on SmackDown. Like that was going to leave an impression. So just really, really poor booking with Wade Barrett. No way in the world that he should be the way that he is now, especially losing against Wade, against The Miz, and Wade Barrett's the champion. So I'm really hoping for something a lot better in the future of Wade Barrett. Hopefully, we'll see some type of Money in the Bank win come next month. That would be, I would definitely be on board with that decision. Morton Downey Jr. Is the answer for Piper's Pit. Next trivia question is, what television show was Hulk Hogan the star of? What television show was Hulk Hogan the star of? Alrighty. The next next segment there. Well, Fandango did distract Wade Barrett, which caused The Miz to get the upper hand, but still, it doesn't matter. Then we go to the Chris Jericho and Paul Heyman contract signing, which was a bit odd. I think for the most part it was okay. I think Hartford was just totally pro Y2J, which was awesome. He really played into it as well. And then, you know, Paul Heyman definitely did a great job on behalf of CM Punk. But the end was just kind of odd when he stuffed the contract down his pants. A bit odd, but I think overall the segment was pretty good. Still, you know, there's still some doubt whether CM Punk is going to actually appear at Payback. A lot of people are inserting Curtis Axel and Chris Jericho and CM Punk's slot where against Chris Jericho. I really hope that Chris Jericho and CM Punk wrestles. I've said before in my articles, and I think I mentioned it last week that I don't like the CM Punk and Chris Jericho match just because I don't see Punk losing to Jericho, and that makes it even worse because he hasn't lost to Chris Jericho. But I hope that Punk puts Jericho over. The thing is, if we see a Jericho-Curtis Axel match, it's sad to say that, you know, all the upcoming superstars, you know, it makes it predictable that they're going to beat Chris Jericho, which is very sad. But Curtis Axel was another rising star that is going to be catapulted by Chris Jericho. And I think if Curtis Axel somehow becomes a member of this match, I think that Chris Jericho would definitely lose against Curtis Axel. Next we have Caitlyn and the Funkadactyls defeating AJ and the Bella Twins. Sure. Then we have another Bray Wyatt promo. Bray Wyatt, I'll tell you, he is one of the hottest tickets going on right now. The buzz is going on very, very thick as far as Bray Wyatt is concerned. I think that Waylon Mercy has nothing on Bray Wyatt. Waylon Mercy didn't work out that much when Dan Spivey was Waylon Mercy. However, I think that Bray Wyatt will definitely work if properly booked, but so far so good with all the vignettes, with just the creepiness of his look, with the creepiness of Luke Harper and Eric Rowan. I think that they look really good. Not too familiar with Eric Rowan. I know that he's had some history in Japan. I know that he's been wrestling for quite some time. I think he's been wrestling of upwards of 10 years. I do know that he was in Pro Wrestling Noah for a while. So came to NXT, FCW, a couple years ago, and it's made a name in NXT ever since. So I think that I definitely think that Luke Harper, I know him as Brody Lee. He made his name in the Indies. Also wrestled in Ring of Honor and Sakara. So I think that, and I've seen some matches with him, and he's pretty good. He definitely has that big man, you know, feel to him. He give you a big boot, but he has some agility as well. So I am looking forward very, very much to this trio. Like I said, the only caveat that I have is that with the popularity of the Shield right now, I just wonder, and I hope that they book them correctly. So very, 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 very much I hope that they book them correctly. Got a question in the chat room. Who was his father? Who was Bray Wyatt's father? Bray Wyatt's father is Mike Rotunda, and his uncle was Barry Windham. Black Jack Mulligan is his grandfather, which, to spoil it a little bit, we will hear Black Jack Mulligan's name again. So we're going to have Derek, the Raw correspondent, come on the line soon. Looks like everything's going well with him again. Then we have Daniel Bryan versus Ryback. Daniel Bryan was upset that he lost, and so he wanted to get another opportunity to prove that he's not their weak link. And he sees Ryback in the hallway, I'm supposing. Gets into it with Ryback a bit. And then he manages to challenge Ryback to prove that he's not the weak link. This angle, this gimmick that he has right now, I wrote an article on Bleacher Report today about this current buzz that he is getting, and I think that they really, really, really can use it to his advantage if properly booked. I wrote an article of why, well, he beat Ryback by disqualification because Ryback powerbombed him to a table, and then Cena comes out and has a standoff with Ryback. But I think that Ryback should be used to put over Daniel Bryan. Not necessarily yesterday. I think yesterday was properly booked just because they are, of course, leading into Payback, and they don't want Ryback to have a clean loss against Daniel Bryan, although I don't really think that would have mattered in the first place. And plus, that would have helped Ryback because it would have made Ryback have more of an opportunity to defeat John Cena. Because if he would have lost clean to Daniel Bryan, that kind of would have threw a wrench in the predictability of him losing to John Cena, because I definitely don't see him beating John Cena. So it could have worked, but I do understand why they booked it that way. And so it was properly booked yesterday. However, I think that after Payback, Daniel Bryan will still vie to prove that he's not the weak link. And so instead, he would, I proposed that he challenges Ryback, because Ryback would have lost at that time. He challenges Ryback to a number one contenders match at Money in the Bank. He wins at Money in the Bank, because the match was great. I was very, very surprised at Ryback. It was a good match, and I think that they could work with Ryback. Needs people like Daniel Bryan to really work on his wrestling skills. I compare Ryback to Batista in his early days. Batista was very stiff in his early days, and then he ended up working with some good names. Ended up working with, you know, of course, Triple H and The Undertaker, and Randy Orton. He worked with some good names that could really help him become champion. But Edge was another person he worked with. So he could be put with the right people, and that would help him kind of hone his craft as a wrestler. And Daniel Bryan is definitely one of those people. And Ryback doesn't really serve much of a purpose. He's being booked as the top guy now. However, he hasn't proved it to me at all that he's a top guy. He's had many opportunities and dropped them every time. So I think that when he loses that Payback, I think that he's established himself enough to make a Daniel Bryan win mean a lot more. So I definitely think that he will. I definitely think that he would be able to really thrust Daniel Bryan back into the world title scene if he puts him over. I mean, I don't see any reason why Ryback should not put Daniel Bryan over. He's lost a slew of pay-per-views already, so you might as well put some purpose with it and have Daniel Bryan defeat Ryback at Money in the Bank, and then go against Cena at, I mean, with the craze that, with the buzz that Daniel Bryan is getting right now, why not have him face Cena at SummerSlam, face versus face match? Daniel Bryan defies all odds, defeats John Cena, and just imagine Los Angeles. They will definitely be pro Daniel Bryan in that match. The match would probably, it would be a good match. And that, I mean, the place would erupt if Daniel Bryan won that match. I mean, you have to understand, wrestling fans have to understand the ratings when it comes. I mean, if it's hot, it's hot. You can't pretend something isn't hot and try to fizz it out. That's what they did with the Yes Chance initially. They saw something so hot with the Yes Chance, and then Daniel Bryan turns heel, and then he turns it to no and tries to defuse the Yes Chance. That was just bad writing. The Yes Chance were hot, and they still are. So Daniel Bryan right now is one of the hottest things, other than the Shield. It's the hottest thing in the WWE right now. Even Chris Jericho tweeted about it yesterday during Raw. Said the best performer, he called Daniel Bryan the best performer in the WWE right now, and I would have to agree. And so you have something hot, and to capitalize on it, make Daniel Bryan win a number one contenders match. Ryback will be used by Daniel Bryan to thrust him back in the scene. He defied all odds. You know, David and Goliath type of match between him and Ryback. The one we saw yesterday. If we see anything like that again, it would be a good match. So I really, really hope that they don't drop the ball on this one. I want to see Daniel Bryan versus John Cena at SummerSlam. Curtis Axel defeats John Cena by count out because Ryback comes out and rams Cena through a table. I mean, this is just really anti-Curtis Axel. Again, the emphasis is not on Curtis Axel winning the match for the third straight week in a row. Last week it was a count out because of Ryback. The week before that was a count out because of Triple H's concussion. You will not have a legitimate heel main eventer if he continues to win by count out victories and the emphasis is not on him by the time the victory comes. Raw ended with us seeing Ryback's face and chanting Ryback rules. That had absolutely nothing to do with Curtis Axel. So right now, I'm telling you, right now, it does not look good for Curtis Axel. They are not booking him correctly. They are booking him quite improperly, and I am not sold whatsoever. I like Joe Hennig. I think he has a ton of potential, but I think that Joe Hennig would be in the John Heidenreich, Matt Morgan pool of Paul Heyman guys. And so I'm not liking what I see. Thunder in Paradise was the correct answer. We're going to bring in Derek, the Raw correspondent, to on the line. Looks like there was some major technical difficulties in his studio, and glad to have you back on the line, and we are going to continue to go strong, and the show must go on. So thank you so much for coming back on here, and let us know your thoughts, sir.
Can everyone hear me?
We're good.
Yes, wonderful. Hey, everyone out there, wrestling land, I have to apologize for what happened. Lights went out. Everything went out. Didn't know what happened. I've got everything on charger. Anyway, let's go on to Monday Night Raw. I agree with everything, as Chris has said, that I've heard in the past couple minutes I've been back. A good thing for me last night, Fandango came back. Fandango versus Kali. And he got tired, so he wanted to start walking back. But on Monday Night Raw last night, everyone noticed that everyone started coming into the ring as the last match was ending. How did you like that transition? I kind of liked it. I thought it could work. I talked to a colleague earlier today that said, if they script it right, it could work well. I kind of liked it. But it just kind of seemed that, there's an urgency on Monday Night Raw. They have to get that thing going. So I'm a fan of that. Y2J and the Heyman, the contract signing. Yeah. I noticed Y2J's new tattoos. He's never had tattoos, and all of a sudden last night I noticed he's got a ton of tattoos on him. But that doesn't bring away from what I liked about Y2J. 2 weeks away to Payback in Chicago with him against CM Punk. So that'll be an awesome match. Regardless, it's going to be a good match. We've seen it a million times. However, Y2J guarantees that. CM Punk is going to do the same thing regardless. And the Ryback and Daniel Bryan, that was probably one of the best matches I've seen on Monday Night Raw in years. Daniel Bryan held his own. He shined. The best drop kicks I've ever seen in recent memory of WWE came from Daniel Bryan. He's got a long way to go. And it was a pay-per-view caliber match. And after that, Cena came into the ring, again with the transition of as soon as they're out, let's get them in, versus Curtis Angle, no DQ. Chair shots from Axel, right back throws Cena through a table. Cena loses via countout. They're keeping the Curtis Axel thing alive, so I'm a fan with that, so let's see where that goes. Back to you, Chris. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for that. And, of course, things happen as power went out. And so thank you so much, everyone, for staying close with us, staying in tune with us. And Derek will be back later on for the Flavor of the Week. It's going to be really, really fun. The greatest United States champions in pro wrestling history. Let us know through chat or tweet at Crave Wrestling who your favorite United States champion is. All right, let's go to SmackDown. Let's like I said, recovering from back surgery, so definitely getting my rest. But wanted to make sure that I got in the studio today and was able to show must go on. We're going to make this. We're going to do it, even with recovering from back surgery. It might not be as long. It might not be as the same format as we usually do, but we're going to make sure that we have the show for you, because we have such amazing support, and so we want to continue to show you guys that we appreciate you all by the support. I mean, the emails that I get being guests on other shows, I just got, you know, I just was privileged to I was asked to have quotes and had an interview to be on a new book that is going to be published, and so I really, really thank you all for all of your support and your support of me through my work on the radio, and as well as the work of me on Bleacher Report and WrestlingInc.com. Humbly thank you. And thank you for all of your support through my recovery. And Derek has just done a fantastic job in my stead. Let's go to SmackDown. Kane defeating Seth Rollins. Good match there. Definitely liked SmackDown. SmackDown was one of the better SmackDowns what we've experienced. And so I definitely think that we are going to hopefully we see more SmackDowns like that. I think SmackDown has been used, for what we've seen the past few weeks, it's been utilized to promote the Shield, and I think that that's a fantastic idea. Next trivia question: Undertaker versus Undertaker happened what year and pay-per-view? Undertaker versus Undertaker happened what year and pay-per-view? Roman Reigns defeating Daniel Bryan by disqualification. Kane and Daniel Bryan argue post-match. Damian Sandow does the shell game in the ring. Sheamus comes out to challenge. Loses the game, but finds out that Sandow cheated. And then Sheamus throws cups to Sandow and bro kicks him. Again, I like this angle. I like this feud. I think it's a nice upper mid-card feud, and I think that it really gets Damian Sandow back on the map. It also will really get an opportunity to revitalize his character. I think that if they decide to do this match, if they decide to have this match at Payback, which they should, Damian Sandow should absolutely get the win. I think that Sheamus is an established enough star to put over people like Damian Sandow. A Sheamus win would absolutely do nothing. I mean, he's already established enough. He's already over enough. He wins almost all the time. I like Sheamus, but, you know, he wins almost all the time, and I think that the better option would be to put Damian Sandow over at Payback, because one, it reestablishes Damian Sandow as a legitimate solid heel name, and for two, it extends the feud to even possibly Money in the Bank. Either of them can be in Money in the Bank and cost each other. It can lead to, you know, and them fighting each other at Money in the Bank can even lead to could lead to a match at SummerSlam. Either one of them could win a mid-card title. You know, there's many options that could work with that. And I think that really they have something going on really well here if they decide to really capitalize on what we've seen on Raw. And what we've seen on SmackDown, really, with Sandow's segments. Curtis Axel defeats Sin Cara. Still don't understand why they do that. Sin Cara has been forgettable for quite some time, and for some reason they think that this is the best idea for Curtis Axel to defeat mid-card guys. Just really, really horrible looking there. Big E Langston defeats Alberto Del Rio. Again, a good idea. I think that the series that we saw was really good with Del Rio and Del Rio and Big E Langston. I think that it was a great idea to have this series of matches, like I said. And, you know, he's clear to wrestle now. He's cleared to wrestle now. Dolph Ziggler is, but if he wasn't, the fifth match would have been good to be on Payback. So I like the series that we have now. Again, the trivia question that's up now is Undertaker versus Undertaker happened what year and pay-per-view? Again, Undertaker versus Undertaker happened what year and pay-per-view? And then Ryback defeats Kofi Kingston. Ryback powerbombs Kingston. Through three tables, Randy Orton defeats Dean Ambrose by disqualification. And, of course, we saw the Shield interfere. Team Hell No evens out the numbers. And then Bryan had his moment. He had his moment. Takes out all three members, and he gives Yes chance, and Edmonton just blows through the roof, and it was a great moment for Daniel Bryan. I'm going to take a call here. Let us know your name, where you're from, and your thoughts. You're live on the air.
Hey, my name's Sam. I'm from Northern California.
Hey, Sam. Nice to bring you on the line. Good to have you with us. What's your thoughts?
Oh, well, you know, I really kind of agree with SmackDown. I really love wrestling. I love the way they touch each other's biceps. It makes me really horny. Sometimes my penis gets really large, and I like putting it in other man's buttholes.
Yeah, that was absolutely crazy. Somehow, yeah. The chat room is deciding to comment on that. Hopefully we don't get calls like that ever again. So, yeah, that was, quite interesting. Hopefully, someone's 15 minutes of fame, hopefully they weren't deciding to do that. So, we usually get our calls screened. There's people waiting here, but, we're going to get our call screened here. Nice chat room comments here about that call. But, yeah, very, very interesting. Sam from Northern California, I think that you need a life. All right, let's go to, Impact Wrestling leading into the Slammiversary pay-per-view. Aces and Eights talk backstage. Anderson takes out D'Lo. Bully Ray speaks in ring before a scheduled tag match. Sting and Joseph Park defeat Bully Ray and D-Von. Dixie Carter speaks in the ring. Interrupted and cornered by Bischoff, Briscoe, and Doc. Magnus and Joe makes a save. Joe challenges Eric Bischoff. Ref calls the match. Ace and Eights jump Magnus outside the ring, and Samoa Joe does a planche on all of them. Books Ace and Eights versus Joe and Magnus a Hardy at Slammiversary. Gunnar Storm and Chavo and Hernandez defeats Aries Rude and Bad Influence. Aces and Eights talk in clubhouse. Mickey James in-ring promo. He brings out Velvet Sky, and Sky wants a rematch, but Mickey suggests after knee heals, Gail Kim comes out and exchanges words with Velvet Sky. Gail Kim hits knee, about to put her in a figure four on pole, but Taryn Terrell makes the save. Chris Sabin and Taryn Terrell defeat Kenny King and Gail Kim. Saban speaks post-match. He gets attacked by King. Suicide makes the save and then grabs the belt and has stare down with Suicide. Anderson defeats AJ Styles. AJ Styles won by disqualification due to angle interference. Aces and Eights come in and attack both. TNA locker room members come out and battle. Battle around outside and ramp. And then Sting and Bully Ray in the ring, and Sting puts Bull and Scorpion deathlock, but gets blindsided by D-Von and 3D'd. Aces and Eights celebrate in ring to end the show. Leading into the Slammiversary pay-per-view, Chris Sabin and Kenny defeats Kenny King and Suicide becomes new X Division champion. Interesting Hulk Hogan interview after that. Interesting Hulk Hogan interview after that, talking about how Suicide. Chris Sabin congratulated Chris Sabin and then mentioned about the being able to cash in the title at Destination X. But they only have 4 pay-per-views. Only had 4 pay-per-views in the year now. Only have 4 pay-per-views in a year. Destination X doesn't exist anymore. So, don't really understand that. I think he forgot the pay-per-view series. Is Destination X going to be free now? I don't really understand that. If Destination X is free, you know, of course that would be good from a viewing standpoint, but that would be horrible from a business standpoint. So don't know exactly what he meant by there. Again, the question up right now is the Undertaker versus Undertaker happened what year and pay-per-view? Undertaker versus Undertaker happened what year and pay-per-view? All right, next we have Jeff Hardy, Samoa Joe, Magnus defeating Anderson, Briscoe, and Bischoff for Masons and Eights. Looks like so far so incorrect from the chat line and tweets. Again, Undertaker versus Undertaker was what year and what pay-per-view? All right, good 6-man match. Good way to bring Jeff Hardy back. Like I said, interesting look by Jeff Hardy now. Full beard, no longer the face paint. Still has the eyes. Face paint on the eyelids, but just a full mountain man scruffy beard that he has. Interesting look. I don't know if he's going to keep it, but interesting way to, you know, kind of, I guess, revitalize his character by a different look now. I'm not quite sure about that, but it was different. I can buy it. Possibly I can. Looks like next we had D-Von and Nux jumping Joseph Park backstage. I think that was the writing was on the wall with that. I think pretty much said that Abyss was going to come back. Jay Bradley defeating Sam Shaw to win the Gut Check Challenge to be a member of the Bound for Glory series. That match could have been used on Impact Wrestling. Just really didn't have much life to it at all. And then D-Von comes out and talks about, you know, what they did to Joseph Park. Asks the referee to count to 10. Nobody comes out. And then he mentions Abyss. If Abyss was here, I'll beat him up too. And then all of a sudden, Abyss comes out. Match is started. And then the match goes on for a little bit, but Abyss did manage to beat D-Von and win the television championship, which was a great idea. D-Von as TV champion was quite boring, and Aces and Eights has just about reached its ending. And so I'm glad that the TV title is off of Devon because I'm getting quite tired of aces and eights. Kurt Angle inducted into the TNA Hall of Fame. Fantastic decision. The only thing, though, the only thing I have about that is that where is AJ Styles in this mix? I think that AJ Styles has a legitimate argument of why he is not in the TNA Hall of Fame. And when it comes to TNA, AJ Styles is synonymous with TNA. So, you know, for their second straight year not to have either AJ Styles or Jeff Jarrett in the Hall of Fame kind of really baffles me. And why is only one person being in the Hall of Fame anyway? So it's an interesting concept by TNA. They waited 10 years to do it. Sting was the Hall of Famer, the first one last year, and now it's Kurt Angle. But I don't know. I don't know if TNA, I don't know if it was a good idea to have it after 10 years of TNA. I don't know if you've established yourself enough to have a Hall of Fame yet. I mean, 11 years in the business, and I mean, you made some type of mark in the wrestling right now, and you got some notable wrestlers, you got some notable names, but Hall of Fame, I'm not quite sure. Storm and Gunner, they actually won the tag team titles by defeating Rude and Aries, Chavo and Hernandez, and Bad Influence, and become new tag team champions. Got a comment on the chat room. Well, if WWE did it, they have to as well. Well, you have to consider, I believe the first Hall of Fame for the WWE was 94, and that was simply because to honor Andre the Giant, and it just kind of broke off and became successful there. But, you know, 1993 was the first year of the Hall of Fame. So 20 years ago, first Hall of Fame, but the WWE as a promotion was founded in 1952. It became corporate in 1980. So essentially, over 40 years after the WWE became a name and even a corporate name, nearly, you know, 13 years after it became a corporate name, but still the WWE established stars way before it became corporate. As far as champions is concerned, you know, 63, Buddy Rogers, you know, was the first, world champion in the WWE. So even stemming from the first champion, you still have 30 years. So 30 years after the first champion, yeah. I think that's fair enough. Not 10 years. Definitely not 10 years. So I don't think that they're established enough to have a Hall of Fame. So, all right, let's go to Storm and Gunner. Storm and Gunner, I'm not too fond of them winning the tag team titles, actually, because like I said before, Gunner is not a legitimate face to me. I don't know what they're going to do with that, but it's just an odd pair to me. I'm not going to totally disqualify it, but so far I don't understand the pairing of Gunner and James Storm. Looks like I stumped people with the 1994. Okay, I see some Sting bashing in the chat room. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. You have every room to say what you're saying civilly, what you guys are. But, you know, Sting's my guy. So, you know, say what you want. You have every right to voice your opinion in the chat room. But you can't knock Sting. Sting is one of the greatest wrestlers in the history of WCW. And if it wasn't for the Crow Sting, the ratings in WCW during that time would not be even close to what it was. So can't knock Sting for what he's done in the business. SummerSlam of 1994 was the correct answer, Undertaker versus Undertaker. Next trivia question was, what Hall of Famer was known for using a fork? What WWE Hall of Famer was known for using a fork? Okay, let's go real quick. We got to get this U.S. title list rolling here. Taryn Terrell defeated Gail Kim in the last Knockout Standing match. Great. It was actually a much better match than I expected. Was very surprised about that. Very sick running cutter off the ramp, off the entrance ramp onto the to the floor area. Very interesting, and that was done by Taryn Terrell, and so that surprised me even more. So very impressed with that match. Kurt Angle defeats AJ Styles. Interesting, seeing how AJ Styles is the one that's kind of getting the push, but it was a good match. It was a kind of a roll-up type thing, so I can see the purpose in that. Bully Ray defeating Sting with help from Aces and Eights. Decent match, but not the best. So, going to have Derek, the Raw correspondent, come on the line here. Right before that, real quick, ROH, CNC Wrestle Factory defeats Tadarius Thomas and ACH and QT Marshall and RD Evans to become the number one contenders for the World Tag Team titles. Paul London and Michael Elgin in-ring segment. They showed a Border Wars replay of the match between Paul London and Davey Richards. Tell you what, man, Davey Richards really knows how to heal it up. Paul London was getting most of the cheers, and I'm glad to see Paul London in some type of televised role. I don't know what it was, but I've always been a Paul London fan. I have no idea why, but I've always been a Paul London fan. Just a really awkward, it's not awkward. I mean, you know, people have their favorites, but I don't know. Just really been impressed with Paul London's work, for the past 10 years or so. And I think that he really could have been utilized a lot better than what he did as a singles wrestler, but as a tag team wrestler, I think that he was very impressive. Him and Brian Kendrick had one of the longest tag team title runs in company history, so very happy, very impressed that they did that. So always been a fan of London's work. Good to see him back in some type of televised role. And they're up to buy QT Marshall and Michael Elgin, which leads Tommaso Ciampa to return. Another person I'm really big fan of his work. Really big fan of Tommaso Ciampa. Jay Lethal defeats BJ Whitmer and Mike Bennett to become the number one contender for the TV title. Jay Lethal is my favorite in Ring of Honor, so it's good to see him have some type of push. I think he should be in the world title contention. He was just recently, but he didn't. He didn't win. He lost against Kevin Steen. Got a question here. Which guy in ROH was in the Spirit Squad? That would be Mike Mondo. Mikey, he was Mikey in the Spirit Squad. All right, let's go to let's go to the top 10 United States champions. Got a little over 10 minutes here. Let's make this short. Let's make it short, but let's make it memorable here. Derek is on the line here, our Raw correspondent / Flavor of the Week editor, co-editor. He looks like he's donned another another title, Raw correspondent and Flavor of the Week co-editor. So we've been making some really good lists. So. Really want to keep that rolling, and it's been some good stuff so far. Again, chat room, what WWE Hall of Famer was known for using a fork? All right, the top 10 greatest United States champions of all time. First, we're going to start with a couple honorable mentions. I'll let Derek start with honorable mention number one.
Honorable mention number one, we got Tully Blanchard. I believe when I think of Tully Blanchard, he is the United States champion. When I think of him with the Four Horsemen, he brought class to it, and he just embodies what it symbolizes. And I'm going to say Abdullah the Butcher for the trivia question, but I could be wrong.
Correct.
So, yes. Yeah, all right. Honorable mention number two, Mr. Featherstone.
All right. Honorable mention number two would be Sergeant Slaughter. He had two reigns for a total of 305 days, or so basically almost a year within 10 months total with 10 months total with his two reigns. So mostly known him and Wahoo McDaniel and Piper, which is actually slide that in there real quick. Another honorable mention, Piper had a couple of reigns, most notably his reign that he had in 1981 was good. Wahoo McDaniels around that time. Sergeant Slaughter had a two reigns, but the reign that he when he beats Ricky Steamboat in the tournament final in 81, he had it for about almost 6 months, and so he was really made a name for himself. Then he won back in mid 82 and had it for about 2.5 months. So he was awarded the title at that time. So I think that he is worth honorable mention. So we're going to go to number 10.
Number 10 will be Montel Vontavious Porter, other known as MVP. A lot of people don't know, but he was actually trained by Soul Man Alex G and by Norman Smiley, if you remember him. Screaming Norman Smiley. Vontavious, he wrestled a lot in Japan. And I think he still currently does. He's was in Deep South Wrestling. Porter made his WWE debut in 2006 and captured the coveted United States Championship with the company. So he's an honorable mention as far as making number 10. So he's actually made that spot. MVP was a highlight reel. Let's keep going. Number 9.
Absolutely. And just a real quick, his two reigns was 419 days. It's actually the longest reigning U.S. champion in WWE history. So we're doing the history, the whole history of the WWE of the U.S. title, NWA, WCW, and WWE. So we came up with a lot of names, really tarried about you know, who was a part of it, and we came up with this top 10. So you know, he made the top 10, number 10, and longest reigning WWE champion in longest reigning U.S. champion in WWE history. Number 9 goes to Steve Austin. His two reigns was a total of 240 days, 6 months. His second reign really don't count, so it was really one reign. He was awarded the title due to Ricky Steamboat being injured. And this was at Fall Brawl War Games. This was the second reign. And then Jim Duggan won it again. He won it for the first time and the only time. Jim Duggan kept it for a little bit over 3 months. Interesting enough, real quick sidebar, I was really happy that Jim Duggan won the U.S. title because he didn't win any title in the WWE, and he was one of the lasting names in WWE, actually a Hall of Famer now. So I was glad that he won some type of title. Albeit the mid-card U.S. title. But Steve Austin, his first reign was in 93. He won it in Starrcade 93, the 10th anniversary. He won in a 2-out-of-3 falls match by defeating Dustin Rhodes, and that reign lasted for 6 months. He was a really, really good U.S. champion, really cemented himself as one of the best in company history. Just really in the early 90s, early to mid-90s, he really established his name and he really used the success of the U.S. Championship to catapult him into being one of the biggest names in the history of wrestling, period. So definitely the number nine spot for Steve Austin. Number eight
would be Ricky Steamboat. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat has done everything he could for wrestling. He, back in the 70s, starting out with the AWA, moved on to the NWA, and then probably made his claim to fame in WWE. He was the United States Championship. I mean, that's phenomenal for Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. He's obviously among the names of synonymous ones. He's going to be Ric Flair, Harley Race, and a ton of others. So Rick Steamboat just embodies what wrestling should be, what wrestling is. He's still with the WWE as far as training the new talent coming in, so we want to give a heads up to him. As far as just somebody who also had the Intercontinental Championship, when you think United States Championship, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat is the one that we remember a lot. What's number seven?
Number seven goes to the Ravishing One, Rick Rude. similar to Ricky Steamboat, absolutely. Really made himself known as a really prominent mid-carder in WWE, similar to Ricky Steamboat. Won the Intercontinental Championship in WWE, similar to Ricky Steamboat. Won the United States Championship in the WWE, similar to Ricky Steamboat. Won a type of world championship. He was the WCW International World Heavyweight Champion, and Ricky Steamboat was WCW World Champion. So really parallel careers when it came to as far as achievements are concerned. I would say that Ricky Steamboat is a little bit more of a I would say that Ricky Steamboat is more of a legendary name than Rick Rude is. But Rick Rude has had a phenomenal career. He definitely deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, and Ricky Steamboat is in the Hall of Fame. So they really paralleled as far as the careers, as far as achievements are concerned, and actually had a really good match, a 2 out of 3 falls match in WCW against each other. They actually had a good feud against each other. So they really had a lot of parallel moments, and I think that Rick Rude, his one reign of 378 days, really played an instrumental part in the mid-card scene. He defeated Sting in 91 for the U.S. Championship, and then at that point in time, he was with the Dangerous Alliance, one of the best factions in the history of wrestling. So I think that Rick Rude is definitely with this one reign of over a year. I mean, the very fact that anybody could have a reign that long with any major title, it was a year and 22 days, was a year and 23 days. So really impressive with Rick Rude. Definitely dominated the U.S. title scene in the early 90s, and definitely the number seven person that is all-time U.S. champion. What do we have for number six?
Number six, Nikita Koloff. If you can remember him, during the early, mid-80s, we weren't the best friends with Russia, and that's exactly where Nikita Koloff came from. He embodied the ultimate villain. Yeah, he came in as a Conrad to Crusher Khrushchev, if you remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And also, he was with Ivan Koloff, his uncle, so claimed. However, I mean, he won tag team titles. He was United States Championship for the longest running time. I think he holds one of the records, actually. So, Nikita Koloff, I can remember him just in titles of Miles with Ric Flair, being in a cage match. Nikita Koloff, probably with the Russian Sickle. You can't beat that. So we make him one of the United States Championships because he embodied the villain part type of it. you always like the baby face, but he made the villain type make it to where, yeah, great respect for it. So let's go number six.
Number five. Number five goes to Greg the Hammer Valentine. Greg the Hammer Valentine was very prominent in the NWA in the early 80s. Of course, a lot of people know him for his Intercontinental title reign and his run in the WWE in the mid-80s, during our mid-80s, late 80s, rhythm and blues. But a lot of people need to... A lot of people sleep on the fact that he was such a big name in the he was such a esteemed mid-carder in the NWA at that time. He has two recognized reigns, but three official reigns. The recognized reigns are 391 days, which is a little bit over a year. Most notably, he is known for his dog collar match at Starrcade 83 against Roddy Piper. And interestingly enough, that was also for the U.S. title. And so I think that it was a great Starrcade 83. It was and he actually won, Valentine won that match. It was a house show. But the dog collar match was what he was most notably known for, with Piper. And that was a very good match. But he's one of the best, definitely number five best, with his number of reigns and, with his length of reigns, most notably, and just what he did in the early 80s as a U.S. champion. All right, let's do number four.
Number four, we got Black Jack Mulligan. A lot of people don't know about him. As a young guy, he played for the New York Jets in the 1966 preseason. That's pretty cool. He also went to AWA. He trained under Vern Gagne. And Mulligan, he went to a tag. He was a tag team contender in the Blackjacks and to Jim Crocker Promotions. He was the United States Heavyweight Championship with Ric Flair. So we get on to that. Mulligan often battled Andre the Giant. They feuded for a long time in the 80s. However, you know, Mulligan stands as a solid number four. I mean, he's got some offspring that's coming up in the ranks right now, so keep an eye out for them. But in 86, Mulligan wrestled under a mask of the Big Machine, if anyone remembers that. Mm-hmm. However, his heyday was with Blackjack Mulligan and Blackjack Lanza. But the U.S. Tag Team title was what he had. Thank you.
All right. A couple minutes left. Number three, Harley Race. Not much to say about him. We definitely put him as third of all time just because his U.S. title reign just really propelled him to all of the, I believe it was seven times that he was NWA World Heavyweight Champion, and he was the very first ever United States Champion back in 1975. So let's go to number two.
Number two is probably arguably the best there is. You've got Ric Flair. To be the man, you got to beat the man. Six times he's won the U.S. Championship title. You can't argue with that. Everyone is synonymous with Ric Flair. Everyone knows who he is. So to be the man, you got to beat the man. Like I said again, high flying. Number one nature boy. What's the number one? He's left.
All right, real quick. Number one is the total package Lex Luger. Five reigns, 948 days, over 2.5 years. Definitely made his name in the through the U.S. title. One of the best names in the WWE. One of the most notable names in the WCW, and by far the best U.S. champion. U.S. championship synonymous with Lex Luger, tied with the most reigns. Clear-cut number one with the most reigns, so with the most years, with the most days. So we want to thank you all. Time is running short. Follow us at Crave Wrestling, Chris Featherstone at Bleacher Report. Chris Featherstone on WrestlingInc.com. Check us out. Thank you so much for listening to us. Great show, as always. Please excuse the crazy caller that we had earlier. Know that your calls will be screened. And we're going to have a great time. Next week, check us out. We'll be here. Until then, have a great week. Enjoy your wrestling, and God bless. Goodbye.